normally right about this time I'm supposed to thank the audience for showing up, but I understand you're all conscripted. You get the money, you have to show up for this talk, so I don't need to. Still, for those of you who didn't get paid to show up, thank you. So I also should thank the, I've been asked, actually this was the technically correct title for my talk, how to write a research paper and not to die trying it. I felt it, I mean, I guess they asked me to give the talk on that. I felt that a little too dark, so I decided you don't want to die. So we'll just talk about how to write a good paper and a few things that I learned mostly by advising my students. And so I need to thank my students for writing so many bad drafts that that I could actually figure out how to tell you how to write good ones. I'm kidding, of course. I'm very blessed with the good students. And in fact, you'll see that this guy, Menkes, got the ICAP Best Dissertation Award, honorable mention this year. And Dan Bryce, the other guy, got the award itself today, so this year. So both of them basically cleaned up the award. So they either figured out how to write or ignored all my advice and did the right thing. So anyway, that's my mandatory thanks to my students. So let me see how to structure this talk. I talked about a couple of things. One was, let's think about what do you do to produce a good paper. You have to think up a good idea. You have to think up a good way of evaluating it. You have to write a convincing paper explaining the idea. And then you grow old and wait for the classic paper award. That I'm doing. You don't need to do it. Okay. So let's see, what about the scope of this talk? As far as this talk is concerned, think up a good idea. You have to do it yourself. I'm not going to tell you. Think of a good way of evaluating it. You do it yourself. I'm not going to tell you. Okay. Grow old and wait. I can actually tell you how to grow old, but you know, I think you'll figure it out yourself. So mostly, I'm only going to talk about how to write a convincing paper explaining the idea, assuming that you are lucky enough to have good ideas and have figured out how to evaluate it. There are a large number of people who have good ideas, don't know how the heck to write a good paper. And if you've ever done reviewing, you know that. But the point is how to not be in this scenario. I do not want to underestimate the importance of those three things. They are very important to actually write a good paper. You need to have good ideas as well as good evaluation. I'm reminded when I was in, I think, high school, they used to talk about how to classify sounds. And they would say sounds can be classified on pitch, intensity, quality. And we only know how to deal with pitch and intensity and how to measure it. Quality is the most important thing, but we won't talk about it. And I'm sort of in the same situation. These are important. And in fact, if you have the greatest idea, even if you are a singularly bad writer, eventually they'll discover, you know, through the badly written paper that you already, you did that good idea, and you will get the credit. However, I do not believe very much in posthumous credit. So after you're dead and gone, people figuring out that you did well, you know, did make a good idea is not particularly useful. So part of what we'll try to do is figure out, you know, a couple of things that you can do, at least I think would be useful in writing a paper once you have a good idea and not have to wait for people to figure out what you meant to say. Okay, one thing I find, again, as I said, much of these talks can be given by anybody who has, you know, dealt with enough number of drafts, and everyone has their own different perspectives. These are things that I found as useful in trying to communicate with beginning writers. You know, you may be much better than the beginning writers I dealt with, much worse than them. I have no idea. But, you know, take it as for what it is, and you know that I have at least some sample population over which these things seem to have worked. So why does actually paper writing get hard after having a good idea and after having figured out how to evaluate it? Why does it get hard? I think some of these are reasons that I find you know, we might sometimes be under appreciating. We tend to think that what's obvious to us is obvious to everybody. Okay, you would be surprised at how often beginning researchers who come up with a good enough idea, after thinking about it for several days and after evaluating, they no longer believe in it, in the sense, oh, it's pretty obvious, I came up with it. Many a time that might be true, but many a time that may actually not be true. What's obvious may not be obvious to others, and what, so because of which you might underrate your own work, and because of which you might think it's actually very easy to understand the idea that's so darn obvious to you. We tend to think that since we wrote term papers before we started writing papers, you know, it can't be that different. I mean, I wrote term papers where I read various people's papers and nicely summarized. If you ever thought that, I mean, clearly that's a wrong thing to think about, because when you read somebody else's papers, they've already figured out what's the best way to present their ideas. So you didn't have to do the hard part, which is what's the best way to present your idea, which, you know, from scratch. We also tend to focus on perfection in the small instead of coherence in the large. You know, a paper ultimately works because it's coherent across, not because one section 7.3.7.8 is so beautiful, because most people, you lost them in the first section itself. Okay. We also tend to believe that the reader and reviewer has way more patience for spotting diamonds in the rough than we ourselves have. Okay. One of the things I'll come back to again is, any of you in this room are extremely harsh reviewers. You know, you might think that, you know, maybe you are beginning and you might not actually be harsh reviewers, but you're actually very harsh. All of us are very good in judging other people's work. We just hope that, and we have no patience in reading badly written papers. We just hope that our reviewers have it, you know, and unfortunately that's not likely to happen. So I think those are some reasons why I believe paper writing oftentimes becomes hard. So I have, you know, I had to make up a list, and I basically, these are the maxims of paper writing that I'm going to talk to you about, and I'll just go through them one by one. Okay, so you don't have to read them all right now, and then, you know, I'll just say a couple of, try to make sure that you get it by giving some examples from my life, from my teaching life, and then, you know, if it makes sense, otherwise we can get somebody else's to ideas about how to write papers well. Okay, so the very first, I believe, is judging your papers the way you judge others' papers. This is sort of a weird version of the golden rule, you know, and I think, and you know, the subtitle is how paper writing, reading your own paper, is a lot like bathroom singing. How many of you think that they sound very well when they sing in bathrooms? Right? And we all sing extremely well. I sound extremely well. So the paradox that I want you to, you know, to draw your attention is, beginning researchers such as yourself tend to write some of the most cutting reviews. Anytime I ever ask one of my beginning graduate students to read a paper, to write a review, I'll then spend a lot of time trying to soften it. Okay, but they have to learn to review. It's not that they don't know how to judge good versus bad work. They're actually quite, yourselves are very good in figuring out what's a well-written paper and not, what's not a well-written paper. And yet seem to be too nice on their own papers. When they are reading their own papers, the drafts that they produced, that level of, you know, harshness somehow seems to miss, you know, in evaluating themselves. And I think it's a lot like bathroom singing. You know, we know when some singer goes off key right then, you know, and they say, oh, that's so bad, and yet in bathroom we sing so well. And so why is it? And of course, you know, there are all sorts of interesting cognitive explanations, you know, including the fact, I mean, in fact, there's also a scientific explanation that apparently the hot steam in the bathroom sort of improves your vocal cords and all that fun stuff. What I really think is, the hot steam in the bathroom, you know, sort of dulls down your brain, and you know, you start thinking you sound well enough. Anyway, but there is actually, be as it may, there is a remedy for figuring out whether or not you sing well. You know, just based, you know, even if you thought that you're singing well based on your bathroom singing experiences, can you figure out whether you sing well? The idea is to just keep a recorder, record yourself, and then after your shower is over, one day just listen to it. And man, I'm telling you, for most of you, I'm sure there are some really good singers here, for most of us, it'll be a cringe-worthy experience. You say, can you believe it? This is how I sound when I sing? And so the question is, you need to be able to criticize yourself at that level before you can start improving. And of course, some of you may not be a better singer, some of us may not be better paper writers, but if you really want to evaluate yourself, you need to kind of take that detached view, so that it's no longer your paper. You have to bring the kind of judgment that you bring to other paper, others' papers to yours. And you have to work at it, because your brain is extremely good at papering over all the imperfections in your own paper, because you know it's your paper. And it's almost like you can't tickle yourself, you can't find fault in your own paper. Okay? So you have to work against what's already built in for us. Okay, so you have to try and read the papers the way you would read other people's papers. You have to try and read your paper the way you read other people's papers. You have to bring in the same level of expectation. And you also have to realize, I mean, as we'll see next minute, that really you won't be there to explain to people, you know, the missing things that you are supplying when you are reading your own paper. So really what's there in that paper is the only thing that other people are reading, and you need to be able to do that. And that's hard. It's not easy. It's very hard, but all you can tell yourself is, I have to do this. And, you know, and basically a couple of things will help, but we'll talk about it in a little minute. But, you know, you have to bring this. That's like probably the most important thing I can tell you. And now, of course, you can say that you're saying, I have to bring the same judgment to my paper as I do to the other people's paper. And let me be just nice to other people. Let's say everybody's paper is good, so that I don't want to be, you know, mean to my own paper. That won't work at all. I think, in fact, all of us should be judgmental. There's so much bad work done in the world. Okay? We have to be judgmental. We have to be judgmental. Be judgmental, and be judgmental also on your paper. That's my point. Okay? So don't say, judge not, lest that you be judged yourself. You know, do judge, and then judge yourself too. Okay, the second one is, it's not about your head, but your reader's head. Okay, I mean, it's sort of connected to what I said earlier. The entire paper, whenever you start talking, as I'm talking now, when you're writing, it's all about the audience's head, not your head. Okay, and your head is actually coming in to figure out how to improve the comprehension for the audience. And it's easy to forget, and especially what happens oftentimes is when we read our own drafts, we supply a whole bunch of missing information that's not present in the paper, and so nobody else will know it, but we know it, so yeah, it looks good. Yeah, you know, I know that I never explained it in the last three pages, but I know it, so it should be fine. And you know, it's a very easy thing to fall for, and you know, that, by the way, is my first paper, and that's how I used to look when I was young. And then the nice thing, I have a little anecdote on this. So when I'm done with, this is actually a case in point, you know, I hope you can't read the ear on that. I actually had completed the work, I evaluated it, I knew it was good work, I just had to write it down, so how hard can it be? And so I wrote a draft and I gave it to this guy, Larry Davis, and I thought it was a particularly good draft. It was really nifty and to the point. There was only one comment from my then advisor, Larry Davis, and he just said, remove the italics from the paper. It so happened in my case that I was introducing a lot of italicized phrases and words when they meant special significance. These are annotated in my mind, not in anybody else's mind. So I would say, that particular concept, where that is dereferenced in my head, but not to anybody else. Okay? And so I was reading it, and I was happy. And when Larry said, remove the italics, I thought, oh, that's a simple, silly comment. So I'll just remove the italics. I removed the italics, read it, and it was no longer understandable to me either. Okay? Because the magic is gone. Without the italics, the magic is gone, because I was sort of partially in the shoes of the people who would be reading my paper. And I needed to dereference things that I wasn't dereferencing. Okay, I wasn't explaining. And so it took me another 3 months, and towards the end I would, you know, first I used to say first draft, second draft, and after a while I said, to heck with it, N plus one draft is what I would write and give it to Larry. And then, you know, beyond a certain point he could talk about technical comments, but in the beginning you had to come out seeing the paper as just, you know, as they say actually, that when children are born in this world for the first few weeks or something, they think the entire world is connected to their body. They are just one and the same with the body. This is like all the 70s experience kind of a thing. And then they slowly figure out that in fact they are separate from the world. I think beginning writers could also be thinking that we are all in like a mind meld kind of a scenario. If you are not one of those, good for you. But I was one of them, and I know that several of my students, you know, when they started to write, used to be one of them, and that would be something you want to get away from. So it's always make sure, try to read it the way outsiders would read it. Okay, and that's sort of connected to the previous point too, but it's easy to miss. Okay, one other thing is, so the next one I want to talk to you is, don't be too easy on yourself when you're reading your paper. Again, a similar point. I know that in this audience right now, that since English is the lingua franca and nobody really knows English, I mean, they know it just as well as French, I guess. So many a time, you know, except for a few people in this room who probably, you know, English was their mother tongue, it's easy to blame the damn language and say, you know, I was so much better in Vietnamese, Korean, or Russian, or, you know, Italian. It's just this English that's crimping my style. Don't kid yourself. Okay? Don't kid yourself. Because organization is much higher than specific languages. Papers fall flat not because a particular sentence is badly written, but because the ideas are not organized well. Okay? I have found that people who know how to organize their thoughts well in one language tend to do it well in other languages too. They may not be able to write poetry, for which you need to know the language. Okay? But organization, which is a big thing, is actually language independent. You wouldn't write the paper in a completely different order. When they translate, you know, Russell's book into Chinese, they don't put the last chapter first, right? It's the same exact order and the same exact organization. The language changes. And yet we tend to give ourselves the credit saying, you know, I mean, I'm sure we shouldn't push ourselves too long. You know, we are not really English speakers and nobody expects us to do well in English. I mean, whereas if ICAP was run in Italian, my God, I would have got the best paper award. Don't believe that. Okay. So that's something that, again, you know, you have to convince yourself, especially if it's not a mother tongue for you. A separate point is no hook, no fish, or no claims, no readers. Okay. So if you write a paper, okay, in the beginning, people tend to not ruffle feathers. Let's not, you know, go and make a claim. What if I make a claim and it's wrong? So you might do good work, but you would start presenting it in such a way that it's so non-controversial and antiseptic that there is no reason for me to read beyond your introduction. No reason whatsoever for me to read beyond your introduction. You have to understand that even though it looks like when you're writing your own papers, all of us, that it's the best thing that we're doing, you know, for a reviewer, it's one of 30 papers or 60 papers that they're reading, depending on the conference. And they have read so many papers over years. And you need to make a claim. You need to actually explain why you think without this the world would be a smaller place. You know, I mean, probably you can't do it for certain lines of work, but you have to argue that somehow without this the field would really be lost. I mean, not in those words, but you need to actually come out and make a claim. What would I miss if I don't read your paper? Okay. So introductions have to take positions. Introductions have to make claims. Okay, and then you have to keep up with actually selling on the claim. By not making a claim, you don't have to sell anybody on the claim, but then nobody would read it either, okay, and including reviewers. And so it's very important for your, you know, introduction to lay out what specific claim are you making, you know, and you know, if you are in doubt, go out on a limb rather than defend, you know, be too defensive. Because you can always go out on a limb, you can read the rest of the paper and come back and say, maybe I need to tone it down a bit. I think initial, you know, beginning writers, most of them tend to go the opposite and say, be very non-controversial and it's boring as hell and nobody reads your paper. That's not good. Okay. Again, remember that the greatest papers will ultimately be read and they will give the classic paper award to your grandson or granddaughter, but that, I hope, is not what you're looking for. Okay. Another related idea, again, there isn't too much of an organization, they are kind of connected, but you know, it's not a sequential set of advice. One other thing that I find very important to remember is paper writing, you cannot do systematic search. Okay, it's completely incremental. You have to have, I mean, we know this already, it's a continuous space. And you can't really figure out, let me first figure out what is the best optimal paper and then I just, you know, look over multiple options. You don't have that opportunity. You would come up with a great draft and tear it apart. That's just the only way. You know, it's hill climbing search in the space of paper. Okay? Now, Having said that, one thing hill climbing is not supposed to have, and you're all, you know, intro to AI, you've taken it. One thing hill climbing should not have is too much allegiance to its current state. You know, the current state that you got to is just only as good as the battle state it can take you to. So you should be able to rewrite any part of the paper when you reread it. Okay? So it's a very important thing in my mind to remember that you're always trying to improve from the previous draft to the next draft, but you know, it's basically the deadline that will stop you. And then you will again come back to it after the camera ready, after that, you know, if you, any time you have time to, you know, improve for the paper. Okay? And most of us will find, even people who have written paper lots and lots of times, that if you read it after some number of months, you might find something interesting that you should have written separately. I mean, blessed are those who actually think, wow, this was best to begin with and I don't have to change anything. If you are, then you know, you know very good merit function for hill climbing, which I don't think you know. I think it's important to realize that in as much as having this ability to rewrite in, even in the last minute without having any allegiance to the current draft is not important. It's the better draft that's important. Okay, and I know that because some of my students would start panicking, and this is not, I'm not asking you to not write anything until the last minute. Please don't do that. I mean, that's really bad because that's actually connected to the next point I'm going to make. You do need to write drafts that are incrementally better, but you need to realize that the current draft is just as good as the one that will take you to the next level. Okay? That's for the writing of the paper. Now, if I don't want systematic search in the writing of the paper, I do not want local evaluation in the evaluation of the paper. Every once in a while, you really have to sit away from the damn computer. Print it. It's okay. I know I like trees just as much as you do, but there are enough trees around, and you know, I guess we can, you know, produce fewer posters next time, and there will be more trees. And the point is, printing is important. You know, you have to print, sit far away from the computer, read the thing end to end. You know, it's a hard thing for me to tell, especially for this generation, which is coming up in iPod and think that, oh, I can read Moby Dick, you know, an iPod, you know, in the middle chapter, you know, couple of paragraphs, and I know what exactly he's trying to get at. It's not possible. You know, global coherence can be lost in one page. Okay? And so you need to read the entire paper every once in a while. I understand that sometimes you will work on specific chapters, specific sections, you need to improve that. So that time local evaluation is okay. But if you're doing local evaluation only, and if the asymptotic probability that you would do a next global evaluation anywhere in the next 1 week is too low, you need to stop that. You really need to read the entire paper. It's very important. Again, most of these are common sense stuff, but you know, what did you expect? Okay. And again, I think this away from the computer is so important that I put star, I put it in capitals, and I also put a green arrow. So please remember that. Okay. Then the related thing I was sort of hinting at is, while paper writing is incremental, commenting is incremental too. Okay, you have a poor advisor, you have a poor some friend who decided that they will read your paper. You are yourself reading your paper as an outsider. Remember, that was the whole point I was making earlier. Okay? So the question is, how do I allocate my resources in developing drafts versus reading the draft? Okay? But commenting is just as much of a hill climbing as paper writing. Okay? I had this, so shall I give a poorly written first draft to my advisor who's been on my back saying, where's the draft, where's the draft? And so that they'll give me some comments. Or should I just spend more time and, you know, do more polished fifth draft? And how does the optimum break out there? All I can say is, you have to remember that commenting that is read by, you know, done by either yourself or your advisors or your friends is going to be incremental. It's based on where they start from. Okay, I was a classic case. One example in my mind, it's not classic for you, it's classic for me. most of the talk is like that, but that's okay. So, Shohan Long is one of my old students, and there was this one particular time he wrote this paper on, you know, planning graph reachability heuristics, and he gave me the first draft of it, and the context, I mean the timing turned out to be such that there was like a slew of bad drafts from other students I was reading. just before him, which basically had like really bad organizational issues and so on and so forth. So when I read this first draft of his paper, I was like impressed, and I even wrote on the top of it. It was such a nice paper, such a nice draft. And then I gave him lots of comments, and then he rewrote it, and he gave me the second draft, and he was surprised that I tore apart the entire second draft. I had major problems with it. Okay, and he came and asked me, why the heck did you do that? The first draft you said was good, and I did more of the same, and you're yelling at me. The real reason was, once the draft was clean, right, I then start looking at deeper problems. If you give me stuff which has all sorts of local issues, I'm human too, and so are, I'm assuming most of your advisors. And there are some superhuman advisors, but you know, but most of your advisors are human too, and if you give them stuff that is easily, you know, look, this thing is, you know, stuck in spelling, this thing is not even a sentence, and you know, why are you using semicolons all over the place? Those are easy comments to do. Don't give them that opportunity. Write a draft that actually is, reads well enough that I can start going to the second level, the more important, deeper, you know, organizational issues and technical issues. Okay, so it's kind of very important to break that tie. Not too easily. I mean, don't break it such that I'll just give a draft to get somebody off my back. And this is really not about the advisor. I said that you have to every once in a while print your paper, sit far away from the computer and read it. Right? You do this at the same way for yourself too. I mean, don't rewrite one sentence and reprint the entire paper and read it. It makes no sense. It does kill trees at that point of time. So you do want to kind of go a certain amount of polish yourself before you start reading the entire thing, okay? And then the last one that I wanted to mention is sort of kind of related to, I mean, much of this is related to not just planning, I mean, as you expected. I mean, I wasn't going to just talk about how to write good planning papers. But this one is probably kind of even more important for planning literature. People tend to, related work sections tend to get expendable, okay? In the beginning, you have not much to say, related work section is 3 pages long, right? And as the camera ready deadline comes closer and closer, it becomes shrink, shrink, shrinks, and then disappears, right? Right? And it's very useful because when you're trying to reduce the size of the paper, other parts of the paper only reduce their size. Related work also reduces the references. So you will get even more bang for a buck, right? I want to argue that that's not a good thing, okay? You should not write related work as a crutch because you have nothing to say. But related work is your pedestal to make a statement about the state of affairs in the community, okay? Whenever you write a paper, you have to think of yourself as the person who cares about the community and tells them what's the right thing to do. Okay, otherwise why are you bothering doing that? Just go take up a job and make lots of money. Professors are very rich too, I believe. But I think there are other jobs where you can get money too. I think the point is that you're writing a paper, you have an idea, you're writing a paper because you feel that there was something missing in the community without that. Not just community, in the field. Okay? So you need to connect the dots and explain to people how did the community evolve, how did that particular area evolve, and why this is not an epsilon/1,000 incremental extension. Okay? And I think it's a very useful thing to do, especially in planning, where we are currently in some ways reinventing the ambitiousness of S3 years are the years you aren't born yet, in the context of the increased scale up of today. And the point of that is that if you go back and take the time to read the papers in planning community 15, 20 years back, okay, they were doing temporal planning, concurrent temporal planning, stochastic planning, you know, multi-agent stochastic planning, everything. They were doing every problem when their planner either didn't exist or could not stack 3 blocks on top of each other under 3 days. Okay? So the pendulum swung the opposite direction, and we spent a lot of time trying to improve the efficiency of the baseline planner. That's good. But then nobody eventually wants to stack blocks. I am assuming none of you do, and you are doing all sorts of interesting work. And eventually you want to come back and start expanding the scope. However, if you came into the field, you know, started looking at the papers for the last you know, 5 years or 3 years, it looks as if everybody else was doing strip planning, and so anything that extends it is already completely, you don't need to cite anything. That's not true. There are all sorts of work that we've done in the past, may not be the right one, but you need to connect the dots, and it's something that you do as a scholar. It's not just making a paper, you want to be a scholar in the area, so that people take your related work just as seriously. One of these days, you can combine all your related work, that will become a chapter in a textbook. Okay, that's what you want to think about in writing. Okay, so that's basically all I had to say. You know, those are the maxims, and you know, I just mentioned, explained to you all of those, and then I actually really wanted to give a talk on how to give good talks, because those are the one things that I don't know how to do. But I'll give you one maxim on how to give a good talk, which is, first of all, you have to understand that most papers are badly written, and you have to start from that and then try to write your paper much better than everybody else's. And then whether that's true or not for papers, most talks are deadly dull and boring, okay? they are. And you know, imagine trying to go to a conference where you have 3 days of relentless talks, one after other, and you are yourself falling asleep during other people's talks, but when your chance comes, you hope that other people will wake up. Why? Why? Give them some help. Be excited about your work. Be enthusiastic. You have to go out on a limb, and you have to sound as if you are almost on some sort of a high drug, okay, so that people will wake up, right? People will wake up and listen to you. It's very important. I'm sorry to tell you that, you know, those who just give monotonous talks, and again, this has nothing to do with language. Again, people tend to tell me, oh, if I know English, I can give like a much more funny talk. Either you are funny or not funny. Either you are engaging or not engaging. It has nothing to do with language. Okay, and if you are not funny and not engaging, you still need to be funny and engaging when you are giving talks, because you want to wake up people, you need to be excited about your work, and so that people have a reason to wake up and then see what the heck is going on. And if you are not good, then they will forget the talk. If they are sleeping, they forgot the talk to begin with, right, because they never listen to it. So that's all I have to say, and I'll stop here. Thank you.